The perfect combination of versatile athleisure and training apparel has arrived. Thanks to the visionary minds of New Balance, Clutch Athletics, and Rich Paul, the designs reflect the heart of the athlete and the spirit of the community. With rising defensive football stars Will Anderson and Chase Young on the roster, Clutch Athletics brings the best innovative gear to all athletes, giving them style and performance on and off the field. Learn more and purchase Clutch Athletics at newbalance.com. What's up, everyone? I want to tell you about a car that you are going to love. Check it out. The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third row seating, I love that, available dual wireless charging pads ensure that you can take on any adventure. So let's say you're ready to take the family on a camping trip or something like that. The Santa Fe is perfect for you. You've got all-wheel drive. You can load everyone up in the third row. It's time to start being adventurous, and you need the right car, and that's the Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
This is Fantasy Football Today from CBS Sports.
What a play! Can you believe this?
No, I can't.
It's time to dominate your fantasy league.
Off to the races, and he stays on his feet.
This is going to go the distance.
Now, here's some combination of Adam, Dave, Jamie, and Heath.
The toughest players to project. That's what we're talking about today on Fantasy Football Today. Welcome back. It's July 5th. I'm Adam with Dave and Heath. How was it, guys? How was your 4th of July? Heath, big beach party?
No, I did not go to the beach this year. It was actually a neighborhood party this year. Spent several hours in the pool. Had some delicious burgers. Did cook meat over an open flame. And I had some hot dogs. It was good. No ketchup on the hot dog, but I did have mustard.
Yeah, well, you know.
Mustard's acceptable.
Dave, how was your 4th?
I did go to the beach. Hey. Wife and I went to the beach. We did have burgers near the beach, put our feet in the ocean. Then we went home and put our bodies in our pool. And then we had tacos. 4th of July tacos.
That's weird. With burger meat and hot dog meat in them?
No. Separate meal. Okay. It was like a side meal in between lunch and dinner.
Hot dog tacos.
That sounds good, right? That would be good. Yeah.
I'd eat it.
It's kind of like a chili cheese coney.
Is it okay to have salsa on a hot dog? Can't have ketchup on a hot dog. Salsa? Could you do that?
100%.
Okay. Oh, I did watch Joey Chestnut, by the way, and I was completely disgusted, and I couldn't look away. And it's unbelievable that this event is what it is. And my son turned to me while we were watching in horror and asked me, how many hot dogs do you think you could eat? And I said, 6, maybe 7.
It's what, 2 minutes?
No, it's like 7 minutes,
oh, okay.
I think.
Sorry.
Heath might know. I don't know.
I have not. I used to do some competitive eating back in the day.
No.
But really? I do not watch any longer. It gives me flashbacks. And
yeah. What did you eat?
I was in a pancake eating contest once. I was in a watermelon eating contest. Pizza. Like you had to eat a large pizza. Who could eat the large pizza the fastest? They used to have this. There was this place in Kansas City called Winstead's. And they had skyscraper sundaes. And these sundaes were like 18 inches tall in a pitcher. And they were shakes, but also they had 4 scoops of ice cream in them. And, like, people would share them, like 4 people with all of their own straws. And I had a contest so you could eat one of those the fastest.
Wow.
One time.
Did you just win?
Chugged it like a beer.
Yeah. Did you win? You won? All right. Yeah. Way to go. Champ, get this man a trophy.
New respect for Heath.
I know this has been a little bit unusual, a little banter before the show. Hope everybody's okay.
I've been in non-competitive eating contests basically my whole life.
And I don't brag a lot about anything on this show, but I would like to say I had my best cooking day ever yesterday.
Oh, wow.
I crushed it. I really did. I was really pumped. And this is all without a grill. So I baked.
Just boiled some hot dogs some water.
I baked everything. I baked teriyaki chicken wings. I baked
some raisins.
I baked burgers. I baked hot dogs. And everything was great.
You baked burgers?
Yes. It was so much better than on the stove. I mean, the stove was just horrible. You know, year after year, I'm making these awful burgers. So I tried to bake them. Baked them for 15 minutes on 400, and they came out really, really good. I've never shocked.
Dave, have you ever heard of someone cooking a burger in the oven?
No.
Remember, I'm not allowed to have a grill.
Now I'm intrigued.
Not allowed to have a grill at my apartment, or my condo. So try it. It was like really, really good.
I'm more interested to hear if anyone else has ever done this or if you just pioneered this technique.
I mean, I Googled it.
Twitter poll.
Yeah. All right. Let's rock and roll here with some fantasy football. Toughest players.
Did you like the baked burgers better than any other burger you've had in your life?
No. I'd much rather have a grilled burger on an actual grill.
Yeah. I'm just fishing for an Acer take.
No. But they were really good. I mean, the stovetop is just terrible. So baked was good and easy. Very easy. Okay. Anyway, who's your toughest player to project, Heath, if you had to pick one?
I'm doing a Twitter poll asking people if they've ever had a hamburger made in a oven. I think, like, as a rule, it's the guys who are in different circumstances or that we've never seen before. But I think the toughest this year for me is Deshaun Watson.
Okay, and let me tell you some of the players we're going to talk about today. Just some. Deshaun Watson, Kadarius Toney, Ramondre Stevenson, Rashad Bateman, Kyle Pitts. Those will be some of them. So, yeah, Deshaun Watson, for three straight years, he finished no worse than seventh per game in 6 point per passing touchdown leagues. I think no worse than sixth per game in 4 point per passing touchdown leagues was, one of the studs. And last year, I don't even think he was top 20 per game based on his six games. He was awful. So, Deshaun Watson, one of the toughest players to project for you, Heath. Go ahead.
Yeah, because he's either the best quarterback in the NFL or the worst quarterback in the NFL. And it's not just that, not just the contrast between the player he was before the suspension and what he was the last six games of last year, but it's also, like, I think there's some pretty serious uncertainty about Kevin Stefanski's game plan going into this year. The Browns have been an extremely run-heavy team that has also had a high percentage of their targets go to tight ends in Stefanski's tenure in Cleveland. And they've went out and added Elijah Moore. They went out and drafted a couple of wide receivers, including Cedric Tillman, who I think could be pretty good. They already have Amari Cooper. There's whispers that maybe DeAndre Hopkins could be on the menu. Like, they are behaving this offseason like a team that's going to throw the ball more. They let Kareem Hunt walk and throw it more to their wide receivers. I think that'd be a good thing for Watson if they choose to do that.
Can we get a look at the Twitter poll that I posted here? Earlier this morning, I said, how much do you trust Deshaun Watson to bounce back to the elite quarterback he was in Houston? Fully trust, mostly trust, meh, maybe, and not a chance. And I thought mostly trust would win, but meh, maybe is at 60%. So that
Which is exactly how I have him ranked. I think I have him 12th. It's like, eh?
Maybe. I thought there'd be a little bit more optimism there. There really isn't. Dave, what would you have voted for? How much do you trust Deshaun Watson to bounce back to the elite quarterback he was in Houston? Fully trust, mostly trust, meh, maybe, or not a chance?
It's meh, maybe for me. And it's got some to do with Deshaun Watson and just, is he a different guy now than he was when he was in Houston? But Heath touched on this. Kevin Stefanski and his track record as a play caller. It's not just what he's done in Cleveland. It's what he did in Minnesota with Kirk Cousins. He's never been above a 54% pass rate in five seasons as a play caller in the National Football League. Whereas Watson has been above 54% in each of his last three seasons in Houston. And he was at 54.1% in the last 2 weeks of last year. So Stefanski's never called plays at a high pass rate. Could that change? Maybe. Could it get to like 57%? That's pretty good. I don't see it getting to 60% unless something really bad happens to Nick Chubb. So that's a huge factor. Whether or not Watson can bounce back, even with all these additions that the Browns have made, that's a huge factor. And then there's the division itself. It's not easy. He's taken on the Ravens twice. He's taken on Steelers twice. He's taken on the Bengals twice. I don't think all those defenses are necessarily going to be dominant. And believe it or not, the projected strength of schedule is actually favorable for Watson this year. It's a favorable schedule over the course of the season, according to the work that I put in on it. But it might be a little rough to start out because he's got the Bengals, the Steelers, and the Ravens all within the first 4 weeks of the year, and then a bye early on. Mm. People might draft Deshaun Watson and then give up on him really quickly if he gets off to a slow start this year.
Okay, yeah, he has been on very run-heavy offenses. Houston's pass attempts per game from 2017 to 2020, they were 23rd, 27th, 20th, and 27th. They were never higher than 20th in pass attempts per game, and he was great with Houston. Now, Cleveland was really a lot lower. It was even lower than that until last year when Cleveland was 21st.
As part of this process, do you want to know what I have settled on?
Yes.
For projecting Deshaun Watson?
Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah. Okay. I have him at 4,300 yards and 27 touchdowns through the air, and 400 yards and 4 touchdowns on the ground. Now, I'm using some estimates here, but approximately.
Yeah.
That would be the second most touchdowns he's thrown in his career if he hits 27.
Mm-hmm. Well, right.
But he's never played a 17-game season.
Right.
He's been on pace for 28, 29, and 35 touchdowns per 17 games in his last three seasons before last year when he was not close to that. But, okay, some few quick questions here to wrap it up on Deshaun Watson. Would you rather have Watson or Tua?
Tua.
Tua.
Watson or Cousins?
Watson.
Same.
Okay. Would you rather have Watson in, like, round 10 or... you know, let's say Justin Herbert in round 5 or 6.
I think Herbert. I'd take Herbert.
Okay. All right. And that is one tough player to project. We'll talk about a lot more later. There was one stat I came across this morning, my favorite stat of the day. Kadarius Toney had 5 green zone targets with the Chiefs. Targets on plays that originated inside the 10-yard line. I had to say it like that for a reason. He scored on 4 of them. He scored on 4 of the 5. And on all 5 of them, he caught the ball behind the line of scrimmage or at the line of scrimmage and then ran it in. 2 of them, he was wide open, including the Super Bowl. But there were a couple plays, at least one, where the play started inside the 10-yard line. But, you know, they're so wacky. They threw the ball to him at, like, the 14-yard line, and he scored a touchdown. But 5 green zone targets and 4 touchdowns on them. For Kadarius Toney, who's a player we're going to talk about later. Which then led me to think, actually right now, is that a green zone target? I actually don't think it is. I think I'd have to come up with it. That's just a red zone target. So it was a play that started inside the 10-yard line. The line of scrimmage was inside the 10-yard line, but I guess that wasn't actually a green zone target because they threw it to him behind the line of scrimmage.
Okay. It counts. It's based on the line of scrimmage.
Is it?
Yes.
Okay. I didn't know that.
Yeah, I would think, well, it's not based on where the quarterback throws the ball from.
Definitely not.
So you're saying is it like an end zone target is based on where you catch the ball?
The line of scrimmage has to be in the end zone for an end zone target.
Right. No. So a red zone target have different things to determine whether they were a target in that area?
Yeah, an end zone target can be from the 50-yard line. You know, it could be a deep ball. An end zone target just is it was in the end zone when you were trying to catch the ball.
But if the line of scrimmage is the 19 and you catch it in the end zone, it's both a red zone target and an end zone target.
Right. But if the line of scrimmage is the 9-yard line and you catch the ball at the 12-yard line, is that a green zone target, Dave?
It seems like you're saying that red zone is determined and green zone are determined by where the line of scrimmage is, not where it's caught. Because if that's where it was caught, then an end zone target would not be a red zone target because the end zone's not in the red zone.
The
end zone is not in the red zone. I guess that's technically true.
All right, let's promote something here. Morning Buzz. If you missed some of the action while you were sleeping, check out Morning Buzz. It's your sports day starts here. Highlights from all the top games and leagues. Catch up on storylines and social buzz. Jump in and out. Morning Buzz runs all morning starting at 9 a.m. And get it all for free on the CBS Sports app. This is the best way to catch up on everything you miss from the sports world. Morning Buzz on HQ. See it on the CBS Sports app. I'd have to give an important shout out here. Please pay attention. Okay, we had four people who donated last year to in our draft-a-thon, and they won a spot in a 2023 listener league. And we don't have your email address. We have your name, but we don't have your email address. You paid, you know, a handsome sum, and you deserve to be in these leagues. We need to get in touch with you. Your names are David Kuhn, Bill McCarthy, Nick Kajer, I don't know, K-J-A-E-R, and Kihan Lin. All right, David Kuhn, Bill McCarthy, Nick Kajer. I'm sorry. And Kihan Lin. The four of you, you deserve to be in this league. We're having trouble getting in touch with you. Please email fantasyfootball@cbsi.com. That is the letter I, fantasyfootball@cbsi.com. Please send us an email, put draft-a-thon winner or something like that in there, and we will coordinate with you and get you set up in the league. Not a lot of news and notes today. There was an article on ESPN.com from Kevin Seifert. And he says that all evidence suggests that Minnesota will use Alexander Mattison in the same every down role that Dalvin Cook performed last season. And then Seifert went on to say that Ty Chandler looks like the favorite as RB2 right now. So Mattison in the Cook role, Chandler maybe in the Mattison role, but the favorite as RB2 in Minnesota. Dave, any thoughts on that report?
I think it's going to blow some people's minds to hear that because there are some anti-Mattison folks because he's just not, you know, the metrics aren't in his favor. But just remember that any running back that's going to get a lot of work in an offense is obviously worth drafting in fantasy football with a decent pick. So he might be frustrating. That wouldn't surprise me. If he's getting 15 carries and 3 catches a week, but he's not getting a ton of yards every single week, that wouldn't surprise me. But the dude's going to be working at the goal line, catching 3 balls a week, getting the work that we want. To me, he's still a round 4 pick. I'm happy to take him then.
Yeah, it's interesting because a player like that, I think a lot of years would have been a round 2 or a round 3 pick. I'm wondering why so late on Mattison.
I think it's Mike Davis.
I don't think that they're the same. I don't think it's the same argument.
And I think it's, and Adam, you made this argument 2 or 3 years ago. I think it was after the draft where you drafted Mike Davis and Miles Gaskin in back-to-back rounds.
It did not happen.
Like the running backs who can really let us down are the guys who we think, well, there's nobody else to take the touches from him. If you're not actually that good, that issue is not enough to keep you fantasy relevant for a whole season a lot of times.
Right. Gaskin and Davis, people have scars from that. Okay, next note, same team. Minnesota head coach Kevin O'Connell said that K.J. Osborne has been an offseason standout. When you see something like that, Heath, does that take some of the shine off Jordan Addison?
It's nice of him to say that. I think it's been a tough offseason for K.J. Osborne. He had those 2 months where he was getting ready to be the wide receiver too, and now he's clearly fourth at best. No, I don't think K.J. Osborne matters to Jordan Addison.
Addison not practice? Like, he had an injury that kept him out of the veteran minicamp, I think.
Okay.
And so maybe that's just the coach, you know, saying, hey, thanks for practicing, KJ. You did great. We're going to need you if Jordan's not ready or if he gets hurt again.
More like JK Osborne. Am I right? Yeah.
Get that way if Addison plays like we think he could play.
Okay, Buffalo running back coach Ryan O'Halloran said that Nyheim Hines can function in anything we do.
The Buffalo running backs coach is Ryan O'Halloran?
Is that the reporter?
I believe
it?
Ryan O'Halloran is the reporter.
Okay, my bad.
So that's a hell of a, you know, job swap.
Nice scoop there.
I thought he has laddered up. And was in Tommy Boy.
That's Callahan.
I don't know. Well, this says Buffalo Bills running backs coach Ryan O'Halloran.
Okay.
Oh no, no. So this was me reading. This was me reading a mistake. I basically Ron Burgundy'd that. But that from the website that I get a lot of news on says Bills running backs coach Ryan O'Halloran. But then you click
Let's
on the
see
article.
If you guys know. Oh, you guys have no chance of knowing who the Bills running backs coach is.
Did you know?
It's most certainly not Ryan O'Halloran.
Kelly Skipper. Yeah,
there it is.
Yeah,
Skip.
All right, great stuff. But you know, is that a knock against James Cook? Because they didn't really use Nyheim Hines when they got him last year. Maybe that changes this year.
I mean, do they have Peter King and Adam Schefter on the roster too? I'm just wondering. Look, this is a team that I think since Josh Allen became a thing, their running backs have totaled 7 touchdowns a year. It's really hard to see Nyheim Hines break into a significant role when they've got Harris and James Cook there.
No, I'm just asking, do you think that he takes catches away from James Cook?
No, I'd be surprised.
All right.
No.
All right, let's take a break here. When we come back, we'll talk about more reporters after this.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
Okay, your favorite Colts beat writer is at quarterback today, and it will be tough to project. Now, Anthony Richardson will be a tough player to project for Heath. We already talked about Deshaun Watson. We got 9 more players to discuss here, starting with Anthony Richardson. Yeah, I could see, Heath, how that would be tough to project. Why don't you actually, maybe we should start with his projection.
Okay, so I've got him at, and I'm right now projecting 17 games for Anthony Richardson, but that is the most, maybe the most difficult part is not knowing if he or Gardner Minshew is going to start week one. I'm assuming Richardson starts week one. I've got him at 490 pass attempts, 3,200 yards passing, 18 passing touchdowns, 17 interceptions, 1,000 rushing yards, and 12 rushing touchdowns.
Wow. And I want to know how you got to 1,000 rushing yards.
Because his head coach, it's 1,027 actually, his head coach has been the offensive coordinator for Jalen Hurts the past 2 years when Hurts has averaged 10 rush attempts per game. Anthony Richardson is a better runner than Jalen Hurts and a worse passer than Jalen Hurts. And they just chose to draft Anthony Richardson with a top 5 pick. I'm presuming that he will run at least as much as Hurts did for Philadelphia.
Boy, 1,000 yards rushing, it'd be so hard to not be a top 12 quarterback.
Like, I just can't. Like, he just ran an offense then went to the Super Bowl with a quarterback who ran it 10 times per game and then drafted top five, a guy who's more of an athlete and less of a passer than that quarterback.
So I actually was more interested in the 3,200 passing yards because Justin Fields last year, he didn't play. He played 15 games, but he was on pace for 2,541 passing yards. It was Justin Fields had a terrible year as a passer. But 3,200, did you feel like that was generous for Richardson?
Well, I think that's one of the difficult things is we don't know how bad he is as a passer, partially because I think there's reasons to think that the things in Florida, there were things in Florida that were not helping him, like the hands on some of his wide receivers and the offensive philosophy as a whole. So I'm projecting him for 6.6 yards per pass attempt, which is the lowest mark for any quarterback that I'm projecting. I think Fields definitely had worse weapons. How many pass attempts was Fields on pace for?
Only 360.
I've got him at 120 more pass attempts than that.
That'll work.
And so that would be the difference in the yards.
Okay. Well, is that too many pass attempts?
I don't think I don't know, maybe.
Mm-hmm. All right.
I've got it pretty similar to what Philadelphia did with Jalen Hurts, is my run pass rate for them, because it's a similar style quarterback and the same guy who was running the offense.
Are you guys taking Richardson or Deshaun Watson?
I'm taking Richardson. I love the upside for this reason. If we're getting 30 total touchdowns, 1,000 rushing yards, and over 3,000 passing yards, I feel a little bit like you're projecting him closer to his upside than necessary, but that's probably the make. It's got to be a top 10 quarterback in your projections on a per game basis.
He comes in at number 10.
Okay. So he's right in there. He's got a great schedule. Sixth easiest projected strength of schedule. Opens the year with Jacksonville, Houston, Baltimore, the Rams after that. But it almost doesn't really matter because this is what the Colts figure to be best at offensively, is running the ball. And so expect a ton of RPOs, expect a lot of short throws, high percentage passes, the occasional deep shot. I would take issue with Richardson being a worse passer, I think you said, than Hurts. I think you said he was a better runner and a worse passer. I think he's got a stronger arm. And as far as accuracy goes, they're probably on par. Maybe Hurts. No, Hurts was actually more accurate in college.
You're talking about coming out of college,
out of college. I think
not what Hurts was last year.
His completion rate was better than Richardson's, if I recall, by a lot. But I still thought that there were issues with Hurts passing when he was coming out of college. Now Hurts is an amazing passer. You've got to hope that Richardson makes that jump here, even though he couldn't do it in any of the last 7 years before he, you know, went into the NFL draft. You're counting on the rushing yards. You're drafting him for upside. You don't have to take him with an early pick to do it. And you can get a second quarterback later on in case Richardson busts or he gets benched or starts the season on the bench and it's Gardner Minshew under center for Indianapolis to begin the year. He's one of those guys, one of those few top 12 quarterbacks that you need another quarterback with.
I remember there were a lot of the film guys, especially, that had some real doubts about Jalen Hurts' ability as a passer. But I don't think it's fair to say that coming out, like maybe they do profile the same from a scouting perspective. Jalen Hurts, his final year in college, threw for 3,800 yards and 32 touchdowns. He had a year at Alabama where he threw for 17 touchdowns and one interception. Like he was
and
very
a higher
successful,
completion rate too. Okay,
very successful passing the ball, averaged over 10 yards per attempt his last 2 years passing. Like he was really, really successful. If maybe not as good as he should have been in terms of form, but Richardson's done nothing compared to what Hurts did as a passer in college.
All right, next player is Ramondre Stevenson. So why is this difficult to project? I actually love one of my favorite stats is the one you gave about the yards per catch and all the running backs who have been as bad as him. So I'm sure that factors in.
Yes, it's so much of his fantasy success last year was based on high volume. And he's a Bill Belichick running back who we entered the year and we didn't even think he was the best running back on his own team. He was being drafted in round nine, two or three rounds behind Damian Harris. So I think it's really like, did he just become a star, even though the efficiency numbers don't really look like it? Or did they just have very little creativity on offense and run a whole bunch of screenplays to him, and now they're going to throw the ball downfield more, and a lot of his value is going to be lost? Or is Bill Belichick going to go back to a two-back system again? Because that's what he actually wants to do.
You think he's difficult to project, Dave? Mondre Stevenson?
I think he's probably easier than some other players that we'll talk about, because you'll just make the assumption that he'll be the feature back for New England. I have a hard time believing that he's going to be in like a three-way even split with Pierre Strong and Ty Montgomery. That's really hard to believe. I think Belichick's philosophy at running back is use what you got. And that can change from week to week. It can change from season to season. He seems to really like Ramondre Stevenson. He spoke glowingly about him. And you know that Belichick in press conference settings, usually when he talks about a player, it's as vague as possible. He hasn't been that way with Ramondre Stevenson. And so I wouldn't be surprised if he loses work. There's no question that that'll happen, unless Belichick just develops the confidence in him that he can be a three-down workhorse. And he did some of that last year, and he was successful in it. So it really is going to come down to, what does he prove in training camp? What does he prove in the early part of the season to earn more work in that New England offense? The thing that worries me about him, two things. Number one, projected strength of schedule is very tough. Seventh hardest, his first four games, listen to this, his first four games of 2023 are against, Philadelphia in week one, Miami in week two, the Jets in week three, Dallas in week four, and then the Saints on top of that in week five. That is a tough schedule, I think, for him to begin the season. Does get a little bit easier after that. In division last year, you know how many touchdowns Stevenson had?
One.
The same as Ian Rappaport and in and future NFL quarterback Hall of Famer. I'm trying to think of a reporter. Stephen Holder, zero. He had none against the AFC East last year. He had one game with over 100 total yards. Receptions were what helped him in PPR leagues. So tough division. No guarantee that he's going to be the main guy. He's got to earn it, like I said. And tough schedule overall for Stevenson.
So, Adam, I've got that that list that you referenced, and then I'll give my Stevenson projection. But there, he is the eighth running back since 1992 to see 80-plus targets in a season and average less than 5 yards per target. The first seven, Tiki Barber in 03, saw 19 fewer targets the next year. Michael Pittman in 03 saw 56 fewer targets the next year. Reggie Bush in 07 saw 25 fewer targets the next year. Darren Sproles in 15 saw 12 fewer. Carlos Hyde in 17 saw 72 fewer. Tariq Cohen in 19 got hurt. Most recently, Najee Harris in 2021 saw 41 fewer targets the next season.
Right, and he doesn't, to me, he's more like Carlos Hyde and Najee Harris than he is Darren Sproles and Reggie Bush. I mean, those guys may have had bad years, but I feel like they were legitimately good pass-catching running backs. I don't know what Ramondre Stevenson is. I've said this a lot. It shocks me that Ramondre Stevenson had a 69-catch season. I don't think anyone ever would have thought that. And he was coming out of college as a guy who was just a big LeGarrette Blount comparison, right? When he went to the Patriots, people made that comparison. He ran a 4.6 240. He's huge. And I just don't think anyone thought he was a 70-catch guy. I don't know. I mean, it is interesting that some guys that I thought of as very good pass catching running backs, Heath, were on that list. Sproles, Bush, and who's the first one you said? Tiki Barber. So that was interesting. Maybe you can just have a bad year, but,
you can just have a bad year. I think a lot of those guys that you thought of really good pass catching backs were at the end of their careers or towards the end of their careers and still getting a bunch of targets because they had always done that.
Gotcha.
But seeing their role shrink the next year because they weren't as good at it anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. I want to bring something up here that I think is interesting. So I have to use two different sources of average draft position here, but if you look at NFC ADP, and instead of doing June 1st, I did June 15th. I've been doing June 1st. But June 15th, we got 60 drafts, and Ramondre Stevenson is RB10. And it's McCaffrey, Eckler, Bijan, Taylor, Barkley, Chubb, Pollard, Jacobs, Henry, And then, you know, you could say Pollard's pretty uncertain, but that group's pretty proven. And then it's Stevenson, Najee Harris, Breece Hall, Travis Etienne, et cetera. So Stevenson kind of starts a tier of uncertainty. I don't know if people feel that way. I feel that way, but obviously, Heath, you have him on your toughest to project list, so there's some uncertainty there. But that's RB10. Last year, looking at Fantasy Football Calculator ADP, RB10 was Aaron Jones. RB11 was Saquon Barkley. RB12 was Nick Chubb. I don't know what it is about the running back. It's just like a bad year for running backs, or like a perceived weak year for running backs.
I have concerns, and I've said this before. The guys, almost exclusively, the guys who have been 20 touches per game or 300 touches per year are 27, 28, 29 years old. There's really only a couple of young guys who have done that or we think will do that. I think there just aren't going to be as many there's not going to be as many great running backs. Like, there's not going to be 12 guys who we think are going to be workhorse running backs or Alvin Kamara.
Stevenson might be, though.
Right. That's for me, that's why he's hard to project.
Yeah. And Kamara was in that group. Kamara, Dalvin Cook, they were in that group last year. They're not there. Joe Mixon right now is not there. Maybe he should be, but he isn't. Would you guys, do you like Stevenson better than Mixon at this point?
Yes, for now.
I'm trying to decide. Definitely not if we get to training camp and nothing's changed in Cincinnati. Maybe today still, but every day we get closer and Cincinnati doesn't do anything, Joe Mixon moves up just a little bit higher.
Are you getting to the point where you're going to feel good about taking Mixon in round two? Or are you already there?
No, I don't think so. Mm. But
that's what it would kind of take for me to take him over Ramondre.
Right.
I have Ramondre as like the second to last running back that I'd be okay taking in round two in full PPR.
Would you rather have Mark Andrews or Ramondre Stevenson?
I believe I have Stevenson higher as of now.
Man, I might, but just hearing that question, I think I've got Andrews at 28th overall and Stevenson at 31st. Yeah.
Okay. All right. J.K. Dobbins is next on the tough to project list. What do you got for Dobbins?
I think, and you could throw Mark Andrews into this as well. Rashad Bateman was actually on the list. The Ravens are very difficult to project because they've had a change in offensive coordinator. They had a very unique game plan. I mean, it was more unique when they started doing it than it is now because more teams are doing it. With a quarterback being such a central focus of their run game, they always shared touches between the two running backs who were alongside Jackson pretty evenly, whether it was Ingram and somebody or Dobbins and Gus. They got away with that a little bit when they had all the running back injuries that one year. But, and then is there any role for him in the passing game at all? Does this team turn into a team that throws the ball now 30 times per game? We get 510 pass attempts this year. Do the lack of rush attempts kind of out of Lamar Jackson's pocket, or do they come out of the running back's pocket? Does Dobbins still have to share the same amount that he always has? And is the offense as elite at producing 5 yard per carry rushers when it's not the same system?
So what do you have him projected at?
I have J.K. Dobbins. I'm too low, but you guys can tell me where I'm too low. I have him at basically 200 carries, 1,000 yards, 7 touchdowns on the ground, 22 catches, 140 yards, and 1 touchdown through the air.
Dave, where's he too low?
I think he's too low on the rushing yards. I think that he's proven to be outstanding in terms of efficiency through 23 career games, 5.9 yards per carry, 43% success rate. In 2022, he was first in explosive play rate. Avoided a tackle on almost 20% of his runs. He averaged 6.5 yards per carry against 8 men in the box. I think that he's going to be obviously the guy that runs the ball the most amongst the running backs in Baltimore, provided that he stays healthy. His last 4 games, I think he gave you a glimpse of what you're going to get. About 11.8 PPR points per game, 11.5 non-PPR points per game. Favorable schedule on top of it. I'm worried about him being one of these 1,500 total yard, 15 touchdown smashbacks. He's going to fall short of that, and he'll probably be somewhere in between what I think he'll be, which is close to about 1,300 rushing yards, and what Heath has, which is about 1,000 rushing yards. And just a big part of this offense and someone to help take pressure off of Lamar Jackson.
And I do have him at 5.5 yards per carry. That's the highest that I project anybody.
That's actually lower than what he had last year.
Right. Well, right. But it's just how many rush attempts is he going to have per game?
I was thinking 15, and then I thought maybe 14, which would still be something like 235 rush attempts, 234, I think, somewhere around there. But I think I have him
basically at 12.
Yeah, I thought 200 was low. That was the number that popped out to me as a little bit low. It's the 200 rushes go ahead.
It's tough because there are certainly reasons both years, but I mean, he's now had maybe 30% of his career games. He's had more than 12 carries.
Well, right. He needs to be paid more. That's what
we'll see if he does.
Yeah, I mean, I just don't know. That's why it's so hard to project, because I think if he's at 15 carries per game, 14 carries per game, then Dave's right. 1,300 yards is absolutely in the cards. I think he's really talented. That's one of the things I wanted to say too. Is like, even on the guys that I'm low on, what makes someone hard to project is when you think they have a lot of upside and a low floor.
Mm-hmm, sure. So he's going in between Joe Mixon and Alexander Mattison. You guys like Dobbins better than those guys?
No.
I've got Dobbins behind them.
Okay.
PPR is a big factor for that.
Let's do one more before a break here, and it will be Khalil Herbert. Yeah, I mean, I'm glad I don't do projections because of, you know, the Bears.
Well, and I think like Herbert, I had a tweet about this yesterday about the guys that fantasy guys like and coaches don't seem to as much. And Khalil Herbert definitely has fit into that group for the first 2 years in the league. I did not like hearing his head coach say that the number one job for a running back is to protect the quarterback, because that is not something that Khalil Herbert has shown an ability to do. I don't know how many, I don't think you can project as much work for him as you can for J.K. Dobbins. And I don't think he'll be as good as Dobbins.
Right. Yeah. So look, Khalil Herbert's been great in limited sample size so far. And whenever David Montgomery hasn't played, Herbert's had, it's a lot like Alexander Mattison, except I'd say better metrics.
But and a much smaller sample size, yeah. Right? Like,
Well, let's see. He's played 6 games in his career without David Montgomery, which includes a game that Montgomery left early with an injury. And Khalil Herbert has 18 or more carries and 17 or more rushing yards in all 6 games. So that's a big workload. I would say, yeah, smaller sample size than Madison. But Madison had almost no sample size last year because Cook stayed completely healthy. I think it was 3 right. games the year before. So not that much smaller. But, I mean, obviously the big difference is Madison looks like an every down back and is a 4th-round pick. Khalil Herbert's not even a top 100 pick right now. That's, I mean, the best part, right? There's not a ton of risk if he's going 102nd overall. Dave, I'm sure Dave, you seem high on Khalil Herbert. Do you think he's tough to project, though?
He's tough to project because you just don't know how big of a role he's going to get. I think what Matt Eberflus says about protecting the quarterback is one thing, but look at the actions of this Bears offense even last year. They ran the ball a lot. Fields obviously had a ton to do with that, but they used multiple running backs when they could from week to week. And I think that they're going to continue to do that. That's what they did do in minicamp. It was Herbert and it was Deontay Foreman really dominating and rotating with the first team offense in minicamp. There were a couple of flash runs to the edges from Herbert. I didn't see anything like that from Foreman. So I'm going to stick with what I've been saying all along with Herbert, which is he's the most explosive back that Chicago has right now, excluding Justin Fields. If you think, you know, Fields is an unbelievably fast player, but he's not a running back. I talked with Herbert while I was there. He's worked on nothing but pass protection this offseason. He took up boxing to try and help him get better in that. How did he look in minicamp and pass protection? I can't really say. I didn't get a good enough look at that. I was watching Fields. I was watching the wide receivers. Did not get a chance to really dial in on Khalil Herbert in that regard. But the schedule's great. Second easiest projected strength of schedule. He was top 10 among qualified running backs last year in yards per carry, yards before contact, yards after contact. I think he's a good player. You just have to worry about how much work is there. It's like Heath said, almost the exact same thing as J.K. Dobbins, but you can draft him 3, 4, 5 rounds later than J.K. Dobbins, and he should be a decent number two running back. Wouldn't expect a lot of catches, and there's obviously a bad floor because if he gets hurt or if he struggles, the Bears don't have just one guy that they can turn to take some work off his plate. They've got two. They've got Foreman, and they've got rookie Roschon Johnson. Right. And those guys can end up being a couple of thunderbacks in there that could really make things hard for Herbert if he struggles.
One phrase Dave used, and I think it was my point of contention on with the Herbert people is, Dave said he's a good player, and I agree that he's a good runner. I'm not sure that he's a good football player. Like, I do think there's a difference. If you can hit big runs, but you can't block and you can't catch, I'm not sure if you're a good player or not.
That's fair.
So just real quick, give me the projected carries for the Bears backfield, and you can even include Fields in there if you want.
Yeah, oh, I can get to the full Bears. Yeah, I think Justin Fields is first, which Dave, I may need to make some adjustments after what Dave said, but I've got Khalil Herbert at 153, Fields at 143, Foreman at 110, and Roschon at 67.
Okay. All right, with that, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we got 5 more players to talk about, and we'll be right back on Fantasy Football Today.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and 3-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
All right, we're putting a timer on here. You've got 2.5 minutes to talk about each player. You will be greeted with a buzzer sound if you dare go over 2.5 minutes. Kadarius Toney. Oh, yeah, he's tough to project. All right, Heath, what do you got for Kadarius Toney?
Absolutely nothing. Just a complete throw your hands up in the air and guess. He's tough to project because he looks very elite. And when you look at per route data and you look what he did in the very limited action with Patrick Mahomes. But part of my problem with per route data is when it's applied to players who have not shown an ability to run a lot of routes or earned an ability to run a lot of routes. Even when he was healthy last year, he was not a full-time player for the Chiefs. There were complaints in New York about whether or not he'd put in the time to learn the playbook. We've talked about this with Sky Moore, and one of the reasons I'm more willing to give Moore a pass for last year was because he was a rookie wide receiver and they struggle in Andy Reid's system because it's a difficult offense. Which one of those two guys is going to know the playbook better this year than they did last year? And then can Toney stay healthy and do it for more than one or two games at a time? I currently have him projected, and I don't know if I'm projecting him for 16 games, probably not. 70 catches, 748 yards, 5 touchdowns on 100 targets, 9 rushes for 56 yards and another touchdown.
Okay. I mean, who knows? I'm not even trying to insult you or anything, but this could go in so many different directions. Do you ever, someone asked this earlier, and I should have asked it at the start of the show, do you ever project less than 17 games?
Yes. I have projected Alvin Kamara for less than 17 games this year.
But not
Will Fuller's last year in the NFL, I projected him for less than 17. Rashad Penny, I'm not projecting for 17 games.
Okay.
It has to, but only extreme cases.
And Tony's not
I would
there.
Say, honestly, I'm not projecting Kadarius Toney for 17 games.
Okay. Dave, Kadarius Toney is being drafted as wide receiver 34, 75th overall. How do you feel about that? That's Treylon Burks, Brandon Ayuk, Mike Evans, Marquise Brown, right in that range.
And it's Toney. Round seven territory, early round seven. And that's, I think that's the point in a draft where fantasy managers are much more willing to take a risk on a player where if they bust, they go, oh, well, it was just a round seven pick. It's a lot harder to do that in round four or round five, because then you'll be like, oh, I passed up on some guys that would have helped my team a little bit more. So I think that's kind of the mentality you have to get into with Kadarius Toney, is figure out where in the draft you're okay taking a boomer bust player. You have no idea what's going to happen to them. And whatever number you pick, 7, 8, 9, 10, whatever, that's where you should target Kadarius Toney. And start making, that was not 2.5 minutes.
It was. Wrap up.
No, I'm done. You buzz me.
No,
I'm not going to tell you what his projected strength of schedule is. I'm not going to tell you anything else.
Okay, next up is Calvin Ridley. Go ahead, Heath.
It, much like the Deshaun Watson thing, I mean, is he still the same guy that he was before? Ridley has the added factor of he's had some multiple foot injuries, and those always scare me with wide receivers. He's going into a situation where we love the possible growth from this Jacksonville offense and what Trevor Lawrence can be. But one thing I don't know talked about enough is, like, their top target earners are basically all still there. So we've got to figure out, how are they going to take this team where we got 130 target guy, 120 target guy, a 100 target tight end, and we threw it almost 100 times to our running backs. And now we're adding an alpha wide receiver, if he is still one. Does he come in and earn 140, 150 targets like he's capable of? Is it chopped up 120 for him, 120 for Kirk, 100 for Zay, 100 for Ingram? Does somebody miss out? And I think with Ridley, a huge amount of upside, because if they do just treat him like a true alpha number one wide receiver, he could be a top 12 wide receiver in the NFL this year. But he's not played football in almost 2 years. He's got multiple foot injuries, and they do have all the guys who earned a bunch of targets still on the team. He could be really, really helpful for Trevor Lawrence and Jacksonville, but not smash for your fantasy team. Current projection I have for him is 83 catches, 1,072 yards, and 7 touchdowns.
Go, Dave.
How much time do I have?
A minute.
He had 9.5 targets per game in 2020. In 5 games in 2021, he had 10.4 targets per game. Target per route run of at least 25.4% in each of those 2 seasons. Jacksonville last year.
Just kidding. Keep going.
Come on. Jacksonville last year, no wide receiver with 100-plus routes had more than a 21.5% target per route run rate. Philadelphia, from 2016 to 2020. No wide receiver with 100-plus routes had more than a 21.6% target per route run rate. What do those 2 teams have in common? Doug Peterson calling the plays. Tight ends had a huge role for 3 years in Philadelphia. They had a big target per route run rate. That did not happen in Jacksonville last year. This is a big TBD, and it's what you, Heath, and Jamie have talked about with me when I've been outspoken on Ridley. I feel like I need to go back to the drawing board a little bit on him to see if I really still believe that, knowing that it seems like Peterson does not want to have a target hog at wide receiver.
Yeah, I don't buy that, Dave, because I think it's more personnel. I mean, he's better than Alshon Jeffrey was. He at his best, he was better than Alshon Jeffrey was. And they had Dallas Goedert and Zach Ertz on those teams in Philadelphia, you know? So
you're right that at his best, he was better than Alshon Jeffrey, but the same thing happened to Alshon Jeffrey, right? He didn't have a gambling suspension, but he had a couple of pretty elite seasons early in his career and then multiple injuries, and he wasn't the same guy late in his career.
I don't know. Maybe I just don't know enough about football, but to the idea of a coach saying, I think I'm out of time here. I've got 5 seconds. The idea of a coach saying, you're not allowed to throw the ball 28% of the time to one player. Sorry, you have to spread out. Like, no, Trevor Lawrence is going to make that decision. All right, I guess I got the last word there. Let's go to...
Funny how that works.
Let's go to Rashad Bateman. Rashad Bateman, Heath, go.
I had underestimated that Rashad Bateman was really pretty good when he was healthy the first 2 years of his career. He had, I think he was like 12 or 13 fantasy points in half of his first 13 games that he played at least 60% of the snaps. He was on like a 900-yard pace in those games. And again, new offense, planning to throw the ball a lot more, but also Odell Beckham added, Zay Flowers added, could be kind of a target competition. I think Bateman, who does still have really good pedigree, if he's 100% for the entire season, could very easily and maybe should be expected to be the number one wide receiver in this offense. He could be a top 25, top 30 type guy, but you've got the injury concerns, you've got the added weapons, and we still don't really know how much Baltimore is going to throw.
Go, Dave.
His 17-game pace after the first 3 weeks of 2022 was 1,281 yards and 11 touchdowns. Go back and watch him play last year. He was so much fun to watch. Deep balls, catch and runs, really turned on the Jets and surprised me with how good he played. Now he's coming off of a broken foot. The whole situation's changed. He only has more than seven or more targets in five games. He's only played 18 games in his career, averaged 13.1 yards per catch. Love the idea of kind of putting Bateman in that same category as Kadarius Toney, where you're going to draft him late. You don't know exactly what to expect, but if he stays healthy, he should hit and have some pretty good numbers. I would take Toney ahead of Bateman.
Really, though? I mean, who has a clearer path to be the number one wide receiver on their teams? And these are teams that have the two best tight ends in football, you know, arguably. So who has the better path, Toney or Bateman? Because Bateman seems to have a lot more competition at wide receiver.
Yeah, I'd say Toney has the better chance. We're completely ignoring injuries for these guys.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but that's why I'm taking Toney ahead of Bateman.
Right.
Yeah, I guess Toney probably is. Like, I don't actually think Beckham is any competition to be the number one wide receiver in Baltimore.
$15 million. I mean, are we wrong about him? Or is that just the worst contract?
That was
football?
The tax on Lamar's contract.
Okay. Okay, fair enough. All right, yeah, so Bateman, you know, one thing real... Let me, do we have enough time here? Is he going to be the 8.5-ish A-dot, 8.5-ish yard A-dot he was as a rookie, or the 13.5-ish A-dot he was as a sophomore?
We have no idea. It's not even the same coach.
I think it's got to be the latter. It's going to be easier to get Zay Flowers adapted in the offense with shorter routes. We don't know how good OBJ's speed will be. We don't know how Bateman's speed is going to be. I guess it's fair to say if Bateman's slower, then yes, the A dot will go down. Okay. But based on the film last year, it should be higher.
That's my bad. I shouldn't have asked that follow-up. Kyle Pitts is next. What do we got for Kyle Pitts? 2.5 minutes on the clock.
He's still a generational talent, still an elite wide receiver prospect, still has not lived up to the promise. And it's year three. And he's got Desmond Ridder at quarterback. And he's got Arthur Smith at head coach. And he has Drake London to compete with for targets. And so I've got him projected for 71 catches, 1,028 yards, and 4.5 touchdowns. Could see that either being way too high or even way too low. He could have a 1,000-yard, 10-touchdown season. He probably will have one at some point in his career.
Should have had one last year, but Mariota missed him too much. So if Ridder can throw with better accuracy than Mariota, then it's on for Kyle Pitts. I say take whatever round you had in your mind for Kadarius Toney, add at least two to it, or I guess subtract it, and that's the round that you should take Kyle Pitts. If that's round five, round six, that's where you target him. Like the schedule form, it's a top 10 schedule projected for the season. Carolina in week one, Detroit in week three, Jacksonville in week four, Houston in week five. He should get off to a really good start, and I still expect him to be at least 1A in terms of target share with Drake London in this iteration of the offense.
If you expect that, Chris and I have been talking about this. I wonder if you guys agree. If you expect them to be pretty even in targets, it makes no sense. Agree or disagree, it makes no sense to take Drake London 2 to 3 rounds earlier than Kyle Pitts.
Yeah, makes no sense. Agree.
If you think the targets are going to be pretty similar. Heath, because in this, you would have to think London's going to do a lot more with the targets than Pitts. And remember, he's got to put wide receiver numbers up, not tight end numbers. So if you right. think the target's going to be the same, I think if you want a piece of this passing offense, the value is clearly on Pitts.
I think it depends on that second part of, do you think, what's it going to be in terms of like how many catches does 120 targets lead to for Drake London versus Kyle Pitts? And I, right now I have London with 10 more catches and 100 more yards on a similar number of targets.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't know if I see it that way. Well, you got to watch out for Pitts too. He did not participate in minicamp, so there's a question about how healthy his knee is going into the year.
Oh, you made it with 3 seconds to spare.
We do have to do one last thing, Adam.
All right, what?
It's not about Kyle Pitts.
Okay.
It's a new timer. 836 votes. 75% of people have never cooked a burger in an oven.
I'm telling you, man, 400 degrees for 15 minutes. It was really good.
The best part is the replies, which all I said was, have you ever cooked burgers in an oven? I did not say anything else, just this. First response immediately, you should note this was prompted by Adam Azer. Another response, ah, hell no.
Yeah.
What has Azer done now?
Oh, God.
Has Adam heard of a George Foreman grill?
Oh, it was better than a George Foreman grill. I've 100% better.
And then, as I think Dave might have said, as in like a meatloaf?
Yeah. They were really good. I'm telling you, they were really good.
Colin
sent us an email during the show. I guess he's watching. And he said, I'm proud to announce I have a nickname for you, Adam. ABBA. Adam Baked Burger Azer. ABBA. So I'll take it. I do have some Twitter polls to get to as well. But we have one more player to talk about. Chig Okonkwo, Heath. Go.
Yes. The poor man's Kyle Pitts, basically. A very, very good athlete who really gave us some incredible efficiency in the second half of 2022, who was kind of an unknown coming into last year. But when you go back and look at it, he was still just a part-time player. Like 60% of the snaps, even when things were going really well. And the Titans might even throw the ball less than Atlanta does. And I think Treylon Burks, as long as Treylon Burks is healthy, is the clear number one. So it's can Okonkwo play enough to out-target Kyle Phillips, who's getting some buzz now, or Nick Westbrook, or is being number two on your team in targets even good enough if you play for the Titans?
Yeah, a tight end, you know. A wide receiver, probably not, but a tight end. Yeah, this guy had, I mean, I've mentioned this before, Warren Sharp at Sharp Football. In the last 5 years, there have been only five players with a season of, I won't go through, he gave it an EPA per target, yak per reception, and 30 or more catches. And to hit all these benchmarks, it was Jamar Chase, Deebo Samuel, AJ Brown, George Kittle, and Chig Okonkwo were the five players who have done it in the last 5 years. So under the hood, it looks great for Okonkwo, but how much can you make of 46 targets? Dave, what do you Heath?
Who do you think was second on the Titans in targets last year?
Derrick Henry. Chig Okonkwo.
Chig Okonkwo was fifth.
I guess Woods. Burks.
Robert Woods led the team
Burks,
in targets.
Burks.
Burks was fourth. Third. Burks was third.
Who?
Austin Hooper.
Oh, yeah. That makes sense.
Was second on the Titans in targets last year.
Yeah.
Did not make him fantasy relevant.
Dave, we've basically stolen all your time. You want to say anything about Okonkwo?
Top five projected strength of schedule, but it's tough to begin the year because he's got the Saints and the Chargers and the Browns to lead off. So you're going to need some patience with him if you draft him. Another late round pick that you can draft. And I think you just got to be patient with him.
Ooh, that was well done. He still had some 15 seconds to spare. Okay, let me go through a couple of Twitter polls that I did here on today's topic. Who would you rather have in PPR, in half PPR, J.K. Dobbins or Alexander Mattison? I just did this 17 minutes ago, so only 280 votes. Madison, 52%. Dobbins, 48%. Mm-hmm. And then I took the Deshaun Watson poll. How much do you trust him to bounce back? And I just substituted Calvin Ridley, basically. How much do you trust Calvin Ridley to bounce back to the elite wide receiver he was in Atlanta? Fully trust, 4.8%. Mostly trust, 38.7%. Again, that's what I thought would win. meh, maybe 51.3%, and not a chance 5.2%. So that's kind of similar to Watson, although Watson was at 60% on the meh, maybe. Ridley is at 51.3% at meh, maybe, and 39% at mostly trust. Thought there'd be a little bit more optimism there. Oh, well. Heath, I have a bone to pick with you.
Oh, good.
I don't really think that it's harder to be a rookie in Andy Reid's offense at wide receiver that had a full mini camp, training camp, preseason, etc., than it is to be a guy who got traded there midseason, like Kadarius Toney. And I think the idea that it's hard to be a rookie wide receiver in Andy Reid's offense, I would ask you, they don't develop good wide receivers. And Jeremy Maclin and DeSean Jackson had very good rookie seasons, especially DeSean Jackson. So who is a rookie wide receiver that didn't have that good of a, or who is a wide receiver that didn't have that good of a rookie year in Andy Reid's offense that ended up being really good? There's one that comes to mind is Tyreek Hill was okay as a rookie.
Tyreek Hill is the one, I think.
Right. But like how many times has Andy Reid like invested heavily in a wide receiver in the draft? Like Maclin and DeSean Jackson were good. Who am I missing here? You know, like I'm not going to say J.J. Arcega-Whiteside. Oh, no, that wasn't even him. You know, that wasn't even Andy Reid.
Well, so. Mecole Hardman just got a multi-million-dollar contract and scored a bunch of touchdowns last year and was terrible as a rookie.
I mean, I don't know. I don't like this narrative that you can't be good as a rookie wide receiver in an Andy Reid offense.
Okay. So this is a Rashee Rice thing?
No, you think Andy Reid is God's gift to this earth and that he is so smart that it is impossible for a rookie wide receiver to be good, and I think that's not true.
Well, I do think the first part of what you said is definitely true. I understand that you probably get tired of the narrative that we talk about the bad Giants too much, and I apologize for insinuating that Andy Reid was good at something.
Can you name five Royals?
Five current Royals?
Uh-huh.
Salvador Perez.
Yeah.
Bobby Witt.
Uh-huh.
Zach Greinke.
Is he on Scott? He's on the Royals again?
Scott Barlow.
Uh-huh.
MJ Melendez.
Okay, all right.
Nicky Lopez.
That's good. I did not expect that. All right, we're out of time, folks. I lose that one. We'll be back tomorrow with our favorite stats for 2023. We'll talk to you.
Paramount Plus and the National Park Foundation present A Mountain of Zen. This Earth Week, you can live stream 7 national parks for 7 days on Paramount Plus. Paramount Plus, official streaming partner of the National Park Foundation.